Warning, we are a spoilers podcast. At times, we are also an offensive podcast. And we are most certainly a verbally explicit podcast. So if you fear for any of your delicate sensibilities, please back up now before you reach the point of no return. All right, pussies, this is your final warning.
We are cheap. We are gritty. We are making all sorts of excuses for sounding like a rusty gas dryer full of feral cats. Welcome to Cinematic Anarchy, and we have back with us today, it's been a little while, sir, we have Thomas.
Hi, everyone.
Or, my apologies, let me go. I said Thomas, but I refer to you as Thomas. We have been referring to you as Viking.
Yep. it has been a while.
Yeah, it's nice to have you back on the podcast, even though it's a one-on-one episode. Hopefully we don't have too many silences. I've learned to fucking edit, so I can trim those down a little bit.
Finally.
Yes, finally. And today we're going to go ahead and discuss a newer movie that has popped up on Netflix. It came up around, I want to say, July of this year. It's a
Netflix for you, Prime Video for me.
Prime Video for you, okay. Well, it was Netflix for us, so that was the exclusive arrangement in the States, is that we got it via Netflix.
And damn Americans.
I think there was one place out there that actually played it on the big screen. Like, people actually got to this. I think this would have been a wonderful movie to watch on the fucking big screen, not on my 55-inch at home. You know, as any porn star, I'll tell you, 55 inches is nothing to spit at.
It's a lot to choke on.
Yes, right. So, what we are going to go ahead and do is we're going to be talking about a Gunpowder Milkshake. I'm going to read a very brief synopsis. We're trying to flesh things out a little bit more, make them a little bit more entertaining, and that's what the whole reboot over the past few months has been about, is rebooting and making things a little bit more fun. And I disappointed Thomas when I told him we would not be doing games today. And he almost quit right on the spot.
Oh, yeah. I joined back on the podcast after being so busy for so long under the pretext that we was going to be doing games. And Chris decided to shoot that dream down almost immediately.
So we are going to be working on Patreon. That's where all of our gaming stuff is going to be. Our little fun, I don't even know what to say. I don't want to call it bits and baubles because that sounds kind of fucking weird. But
bits and bobbles.
Bits and bubbles.
Don't ever do that accent ever again.
That wasn't really an accent.
Don't ever say it like that ever again.
Ever again. I'll try. I can't guarantee it, sir. I do apologize. So. Here's the quick storyline synopsis. In her turbulent life as a professional assassin, Scarlett was cruelly forced to abandon her daughter Sam and go on the run. Years later, despite the estrangement, Sam has also grown up into a cold-blooded assassin. After a high-stakes mission spins out of control, putting an innocent 8-year-old in the middle of a gang war she herself has unleashed, Sam has no choice but to go rogue. This ultimately leads back to her mother and her former hit woman sidekicks as they all join forces in an avenging war against those who took everything from them, a.k.a. The Firm. So that's the quick breakdown. And just to start with, the cast for this fucking movie is just amazing, period. Like,
it is, but at the same time, the bit that annoyed me was the fact that they got Karen Gillan to do an American accent when her mother is an English actress who did an English accent. Why couldn't they have got Karen to do an English accent as well? She's Scottish, so an English accent isn't too far off for her to do. That's the bit that annoyed me.
You know, you actually touched on a point that I was I was going to bring that up. That's like one of the first things that I wanted to bring up.
Her American accent is kind of bad, let's be honest.
It had undertones of her actual Scottish accent. Like, it kind of bled through a little bit in certain areas. Like,
very much so. Now, the big point I want to make about this film is, it, as bad as this is going to sound, it gave me hella John Wick vibes. Like, the cafe, the old school cafe, was basically the Continental. Okay?
Right.
It was the no gun zone, you know, it was the safe haven place, basically. You know what I mean? That, and then it's all about assassins, and then the fucking people in charge want the fucking main people dead. It gave me hella John Wick vibes. Okay?
So,
it's like a knockoff the female version of John Wick. Just saying.
Here's where you get to spit at me for just a minute. I know I'm saying spit a lot lately, so maybe I'll swallow for a minute. I have not seen John Wick.
What?
Yes. Well, you know me as a person that watches a lot of trashy fucking movies.
Go straight to jail. Go straight to jail.
Go straight to jail.
You pass go. You don't collect your 200. You're going straight to fucking jail.
I can accept that. I've been watching a lot of older, you know, like early 2000s, 90s, 80s, 70s, like really, really bad movies. You know me as the guy that loves to torture you guys with bad movies.
Very, very true, but I'm going to say this now. I know you're the boss, but right now, for the fact that what you just said, you're fired. You are fired.
So, why don't we do this? Why don't we just do an episode where we sit down and discuss all three of the John Wick films, like all in one felt swoop?
I'm okay with that, as long as it lands on a day where I'm not busy.
Well, see there, you know what the good thing about that is that we can always move off of here after we're done, and I can text you, and you can figure out a day when you're not busy, and we can talk about the movies. And then all I have to do is actually fucking watch them.
Yeah, you fucking need to.
Which is...
Jesus, man.
...is very, very important from what I'm hearing.
If you don't watch John Wick... And this is for everyone listening to the podcast who enjoys my voice. I will never appear in another episode ever again until you watch them. Even if we do not talk about them, you have to watch them.
All right. I mean, that's fair. I actually own the first two. I don't own the third one, so I'd have to actually rent it, but...
Realistically, you don't even need to watch the... You just need to watch the first one. After the first one, I could give two shits less.
Somebody actually...
But the first is mandatory.
Somebody purchased the first two movies for me, like, a year ago, just before Christmas, as
you
a gift.
You had them for a year and haven't watched them?
I have had them for a year. That's how... And they had been free to access in different areas for me. So, in all likelihood, I should have watched this...
You're just digging yourself a deeper grave right now, Chris.
Well, that's what I do. I dig a hole, and then once I'm done digging the hole, I look up and say, nah, not deep enough, and I keep digging.
But, yeah, long story short, this gives... When you watch it, you'll understand what I mean. This gives me hella John Wick vibes.
I've heard a lot of people say that it gives off John Wick vibes. Also, a lot of people have kind of likened it to, I think, Atomic Blonde, is what they've said.
Well, it is. It's like the best way to explain this movie. It's like they gave the Spice Girls, because that's basically what they've done. It's like they've given the Spice Girls access to guns. That's basically what this film is. It's like they let the Spice Girls watch John Wick one too many times, and then they made a movie. That's what the vibes this shit gives me, I'm not gonna lie.
This movie, from the get-go, gave me Man-Hate vibes.
Never seen Man-Hate.
No. It's not a movie. Just man hate in general.
Oh, it's a very feministic film, yeah.
It's actually very much a badass women versus the patriarchy movie.
It's a feminist film, let's be honest. It's a feminist film.
Because,
and Miss B will have something to say about that, but it's true, it's a feminist film.
There's not a single woman on their side, and there's not on the bad guy's side, and there's not a single man on their side. Is there?
Well, there was initially.
No.
No, from the very beginning, you get the vibe that one man is on their side.
Oh,
that
I knew.
Is the guy, I was going to say, that's the guy in charge of the firm. The one who deals with them directly. He's supposed to be the man on their side.
This movie was so fucking transparent that when I saw how the mother and him and her were split up initially, and when I saw him holding her back, I was like, he's going to be the bad guy. That's the bad guy right there. I knew it.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
I think that Paul Giamatti...
It wasn't a good movie. It was a decent movie.
It was okay for what it was. And what it was is a movie that... It was a quick shoot 'em up movie. That's all it was. Not a lot of substance.
It's not a movie that deserves a sequel, but it's one of those movies where I can see certain people are going to want to see.
I hate to disappoint you. There's already a sequel being made.
I fucking knew it. It doesn't deserve a sequel. It doesn't. We get a sequel to this trash, but we don't get the trilogy film we needed from Hellboy. Some bullshit. That's fucking bullshit.
Well, not for nothing, David Arbor dropped that fucking ball.
Even Ron Perlman himself was like, no, I wanted to do a trilogy.
Well, the problem with Ron Perlman doing a trilogy is they mishandled that second film so badly that it just... I mean, it's not a bad film, don't get me wrong.
I enjoyed it.
But they mishandled the marketing of that film so badly that there was no box office. It really just stunk.
It tanked.
Tanked bad.
It tanked.
That's one of those movies that we should discuss, period, because it's one of those things that it should have done well at the box office. It was a good movie, good concept.
If people actually went to the box office to watch it, it'd have done really fucking well because it was good. It was only when it got released to DVD, I believe it was, it was DVD for the time, that people actually watched it. And it was good, and people enjoyed it.
Okay, so to just kind of give you an idea of who stars in the movie, we have our lead actress, obviously, played by Karen Gillan. Her mother, played by Lena Headley, who is very well known for her time in Game of Thrones.
Multiple films. Not only Game of Thrones, she also played the wife to King Leonidas in both 300 films.
I want to say, if you're in your early 20s and before, most people are going to know her from Game of Thrones. You know, the 300 films, I don't want to call them niche movies.
I'm in my early 20s.
I thought you were like 40, man. You're not 40?
No, because if I'm 40, then you're about 320.
Touche and fuck you.
Okay. You want me a dick about my age? I could be an asshole too.
Then of course we have Carla Gia. Sorry, the aunts played by Carla Gugino.
Gugino, better known as for the people who are my age and maybe a tiny bit older. She played the mother of Junie and, I've forgotten, the Carmen Cortez in Spy Kids.
She was also one of the lead characters in... what is the name of that movie now? That's going to bother me. My brain... I'm sorry, I've been at work all day.
We're not talking about your porn fetishes, Chris. About movies that they've been in.
Yeah, she has never been in porn that I know of, because I've watched plenty.
Incorrect. Incorrect. I found it. Trust me. She has.
No. Anyway.
No, she has.
She was in The Watchmen.
Yes, she was. She played the mother.
She was in The Watchmen, and that's not the movie that I was trying to think of, though. I'm giving myself a headache, because I should remember
that. Stop trying to think about it, okay? It's going to hurt your head more.
Ah, okay. Well, that's not going to happen. I'm going to continue to hurt my head.
Then we had the other aunt, Florence, who was played by Michelle Yeoh.
Oh my God, Michelle Yeoh, yes, right?
I know her better for her roles in Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon?
Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon was a really big one for her.
Also played the mother in a movie called Crazy Rich Asians, which was a phenomenal film because of the opening scene where she appears in a hotel with her kids out in the pouring rain, and they try and send her away because she's Asian. So her husband buys the hotel.
My first Michelle Yeoh film was actually 007 Tomorrow Never Dies. She starred as one of the Bond girls alongside of Pierce Brosnan. Waylon.
Yeah, that might be a little bit before my time, Grandad.
Well, Pierce Brosnan's version of 007 was like right along the lines of the campy shitty movies that I like, because there was so much comedic value to his time as 007. It was like right up there with that really bad Roger Moore 007 flick Moonraker. Like really bad.
Off topic quickly about 007, who do you think would play a better James Bond? Okay? Idris Elba or Jason Statham?
Who do I think would make a better James Bond? Idris Elba or Jason Statham? I would say Statham has the acting chops. Not the acting chops, but the action chops. However, I think Idris Elba is much more stoic, and I think that he would probably get into it a little more.
He's been getting a little bit more into his action. Like, if you've seen Hobbs and Shaw, where he goes up against Dwayne and Jason.
Yes.
In that movie, he really pulls off the acting for the action in that, like, really fucking well.
That's why I'm kind
almost
of leaning
like
on
it
him.
Was natural.
You know what I just realized? We're looking at Michelle Yeoh as the one of the other aunts. We haven't quite gotten to the third aunt yet, but I brought up her IMDb page, and right now, Avatar 2 and Avatar 3 are both in post-production, and they're filming a 4 and 5. Do
Avatar
we need that
did
many?
That well at the box office. they are definitely going to be making multiples of that film. It's just going to take them multiple years to do it until the technology to make those movies becomes so easily accessible that they can do it within a year.
Sounds good to me.
Because like you got to think. When did they start filming the first Avatar movie, and how long did it take them to get it all ready to be released?
That first movie took forever to get released. Like, it took
exactly a
long time.
And when did it come out? 2012?
That's a good question. You're asking me kind of on the spot, and I don't have that information up, but I'll check it out.
Because if it is 2012, then what, we're nearly on the 10-year mark of when the first one came out, which means it's taken them 10 years and more to get the second one released.
The original film, Avatar, was released in 2009.
2009, so it's been over 10 years.
Right.
It's been, 12 years, I think it is now? 12, Ron? Yeah, 12 years.
12 years,
and they still haven't released the second one. That just shows you how much fucking time and effort they're actually putting into this fucking movie.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, this Avatar...
Because there's no way this has gone on a back burner, because there are people who really want the second one. There's no way this has gone on the back burner.
Avatar was one of the highest grossing films of all time. And
it was. It was phenomenal.
The fact that they have rocked out the next, four installments
six
of the franchise that quickly shows you that they're trying to bank off of it before it's buried so deep that nobody even knows what the hell
it is
anymore.
They need to hurry up and get the second one released, because if they wait any longer, it's literally going to become one of those ones that by the time I'm 30, we'll get the second one if they take as long as I think they're going to take, which means it's going to be one of them ones where it's like, fucking, I'm going to be explaining it to my kids, and it is not going to go down well, because the way the generations are going lately, they're not really interested in movies anymore. They're more interested in what's on their phones.
Avatar 2 is scheduled for a 2022 release. They don't have a specific day.
So next year. Which I hope happens, because I will actually go to the box office to watch that bitch.
I'm curious if they're going to try to like release them like 1 year apart, the next four installments. Like, you know...
I don't think they'll do that. It might be a 2 years part. What? Because here's the thing, because it keeps the fans eager then, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Release them year after year, it's going to be one of them ones where people are just going to expect it for another year.
The thing that I'm thinking right now, though, is if they try to release that movie and it's fucking pure shit, then they've also already pretty much finished the other three movies. It's like, well, that was box office trash. Now we got three more movies. What are we supposed to do with them?
I don't think the second one is going to be trash, because I feel like with the amount of time and effort that they're putting into this film, that it's one of the, it's like it can't be bad because of what they're doing. Like, this is probably going through extensive people rewatching it. They're getting specific fans to come in and go, test watch this, tell us what's good, tell us what's bad, you know, sort of thing.
You know how long it took to get the New Mutants movie out there?
Gone how long?
Right. It took a while. If you watch the pre-production hell that it went through, and then the post-production bullshit that it went through, and then COVID hit before it could really get a release in theaters, and so they kind of pushed it off and pushed it off and pushed it off. And when I finally got to watch it, I was like, wow, this was really bad. Like, horrible. I did not like New Mutants at all.
I've not seen it.
It was Marvel's first shot at doing, like, a horror film.
No, if you really want to put a film that went through hell and extensive time and effort to get released.
Right.
We're going to go on this one. Ryan Reynolds' Deadpool. That took him for... That literally... That wasn't even going to get released if someone didn't release that test footage. That test footage was a concept. It was never meant to be a film.
Yeah, he was never meant to actually have that based off of the shit... Oh, the version the from what, happened. The Wolverine Origins movie?
Now been dubbed canon, by the way. Just saying.
How do you have a merc with a mouth that doesn't have a mouth?
Very true. But that was the whole point. In that film, I think it was more the whole point of Wade Wilson before he went through his surgeries. You know what I mean? He was the talkative one. He was the dick. He was the Wade Wilson we know. He wouldn't shut the fuck up.
So before I drag us kicking and screaming back into the actual, you know, thing that we're supposed to be talking about, Gunpowder Milkshake, I just want to say one thing. Picture Ryan Reynolds in the Wade Wilson makeup.
I'd still fuck him.
Wrap your mind around the idea of him being a revamped version of Freddy Krueger.
I'd still fuck him.
No. So you know that shit movie that we got for Freddy Krueger, the Nightmare on Elm Street reboot that they did?
Please don't.
Yes. What I'm saying is, I think that they needed somebody a little bit more like Ryan Reynolds to do that kind of role, that had that kind of snarky-ass fucking attitude. Little creepy, little snarky.
No, they needed his attitude, but they needed the more creepy figure.
You know who?
But either way, I'd still fuck Ryan Reynolds. I'm a straight man. Bear in mind, guys, I am a straight man. But Ryan Reynolds, there is something about him that makes most men, if not all straight men, have a bit of a twinkle in their pants.
I'm sorry. I'm saving that one little gay moment for Momoa. So, Ryan Reynolds.
Bullshit. If Ryan Reynolds appeared at your front door right now and said, "I will make out with you, you just have to show me you got a boner," your dick would be erect by the time you open the door.
I'd be like pushing him out of the way. Did you bring Jason with you? Because if not, you need to leave.
That's bullshit. Bullshit. Do you smell that too, guys? Yeah, I smell bullshit.
That's a little... Yeah. No. Anyway.
Next, Anna May, also better known as the actress Angela Bassett.
Angela Bassett as Auntie May, or Anna May.
Phenomenal actress. Also known, and most people will know this, from Black Panther. She plays Black Panther's mother.
That's right, isn't it? I did not even think about that. She's also in a TV show that I'm currently watching. She's, I think it's just 911 is the name of the TV show. And she actually plays a pretty badass cop in that show. But she's been in all sorts of things, from Olympus Has Fallen to the movie Contact. She was in Strange Days. She's in the middle of filming the sequel to Black Panther right now, Wakanda Forever.
She is, yes.
She's always kind of been an amazing actress, so...
Oh, she's a phenomenal actress.
And, of course, we have as our lead bad guy, Mr. Paul Giamatti.
I actually don't like him as an actor, period. I think he's a dick.
So you're catching him in the wrong movies if you don't like him as an actor. There's a lot of movies that he's done that I just don't like him in. He kind of has that Weasley quality. I think he was very good in Cinderella Man. If you like action kind of shoot 'em up films, he was also the bad guy in Rock and Rolla. He's got a lot of movies that he's done really well in. There's some movies that I just look at him and go, oh.
He's the sort of actor that if I met in real life, I would throat punch him.
He actually did a really good job in Straight Outta Compton as well. Have you seen that movie yet? You have not seen that. No?
Yes, I have seen that.
See?
And still would throat punch him.
But he plays an asshole so well. And
that's why I throat punch him.
He might be reprising his role in Spider-Man.
What was he in Spider-Man?
In the Amazing Spider-Man 2, he was Rhino.
Oh, yeah, that's another reason why I thought he was a dick, because he just... No.
You thought he was a dick because of that?
It was fucking... Rhino, yes. Rhino does not wear a metal fucking suit like that. No, so... Rhino... He's a big, strong.
Pardon me for just a minute. My speaker just died. Did you hear that?
Yes.
That come over everything? Yeah, it actually... So, we use a bit of a speaker to try to enhance the system here and make sure that everything is copacetic. And it just warned me that...
The battery is low. You must please charge now. And, of course, I don't have any of the wires for it. So,
we're going to very quickly talk about Paul Giamatti here.
He's a dick. I hate him.
Do you think he's a piece of shit?
If I met him in real life, I would punch him without hesitation.
In the movie Big Mouth, or not the movie, the TV show, the animated show Big Mouth on Netflix, he actually plays Andrew's shit. He literally...
That's about the most accurate role for him.
Quite literally plays a piece of shit. I'm not going to agree with you. Honestly, I liked Paul Giamatti and a lot of stuff. Other things I didn't really enjoy. He's a crapshoot as an actor for me. There's things where I think he does a really fucking good job, and there's things where it's like,
As I stated, if I met him in real life, he would be getting throat punched. Without hesitation.
He has a decent singing voice.
Huh?
He has a decent singing voice.
Not when I'm done with him. No? I have no fucking vocal cords.
Oh, you're getting violent tonight. Okay. Well, now that we're talking about throat-punching Paul Giamatti, we may want to move on just a little bit here.
I like Ralph. He's a good actor. I like him. Except for the fact in this movie where he's an English actor trying to do an American accent again. Don't like it!
Okay. Of course, rounding out the cast is only really four other people that I really feel stood out in the movie, and that is that one scene, that first really big fight scene that you see with Karen Gilliam. You have basically the fucking Three Stooges that are originally sent after Karen to go and basically take her down and kill her. You have Yankee, Shocker, and Crow. These three, basically, I call them just Three Stooges.
Yeah. They're three fuck-ups.
Who got their asses handed to them, and then didn't learn any better, and tried to kick the shit out of her again, after some random fucking Dr. Ricky paralyzes her arms.
The three members of the podcast who are no longer with us.
Yeah. So, before we really get into the actual movie itself, we're going to go ahead and take a quick break, and we're going to basically let our sponsors have their words, and we will be right back. All right, so basically our movie here, it opens up on a flashback to a diner, basically the diner that opens and closes this movie, where we have 12-year-old Sam, and she learns that her mother is an assassin and that she is skipping town after a job that has gone horrible. Basically, these men come to kill her at the diner. She kills them and escapes, leaving her daughter behind with Paul Giamatti, who is the head of the firm, the company that she worked for and has been doing her her job.
Assassinations.
Her assassinations. So, I've actually been noticing a trend in a lot of movies lately. There are a lot of female-driven movies about assassinations where it is a woman who is hired by a company or a gang or whatever that is comprised of all men. So basically the one female assassin in a world of all men that she now has to fight back against because she screwed up somehow.
Yeah.
So that's how our movie opens up. I'm not sure how much I enjoyed really any of this from point A to point B. There was a lot of creative...
If we take it into the perspective of there's not just point A to point B, we have point A, point B, and point C. Okay, let's put it that way. We have the beginning of the film, the middle of the film, and the end of the film. Between points B and C are where I thought the film was decent. But from point A to point B was kind of slow, in my opinion.
I think that... Of course, you know, you have her being... You have, like, 15 years later, they basically focus on Sam. She's now working for Nathan at the firm. That's Paul Giamatti's character. And he sends her to basically go stock up on new weapons. She screwed up a job herself. This is a big discussion. They don't really tell her how badly she screwed up on this particular job. But there's this whole discussion about her having to get new weapons and kind of get clean weapons.
Which is the bit that makes me kind of laugh, because she's supposed to be this professional assassin who's been doing her job for many, many years. You'd think her knowledge, her logic would have been, whatever guns she's using, get rid of them and get new ones immediately after. But in the film, when Nathan or Paul Giamatti's character tells her she needs to get new guns, her response was, I've had these guns for years.
Right.
Basically opening up to be tracked. If you're a professional assassin, you're getting new guns on a regular basis because of the fact of then you can't be traced.
That's absolutely correct, and I definitely get what you're saying there. I don't know why she felt the need to, like, I don't know if it was sentimental, if these were weapons that she had inherited from her mother. But as you know, if you've seen plenty of these assassination movies, you can only plan so much, and one small thing that you didn't plan for can fuck up the whole situation. Basically, she goes to get new weapons to go start a new job. She goes after this guy who basically stole a bunch of money from the firm. I don't know if it was from the firm or it was from the Russians that the firm is working with. It looks
so
like.
The money that was stolen was from the firm, but it was the person who stole the money was basically someone who worked for the firm under their alias part of it, where they were a legal business.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like the firm had obviously their undercover version where they were a legal business, and that's where this person stole the money from.
So basically the firm's laundering money for other people.
Yeah.
Yes. This is where, of course, the aunts come in. Basically, she meets up with the three aunts, Madeline, Florence, and Anna?
Yeah.
Anna May?
Yeah.
I love her name. Anime. I love that her name's Anna May. Yeah. And
didn't catch that. That's actually quite good.
I think it's interesting that their entire weapons depot is built out of a public library.
I like the way they give her the guns as well. because they don't tell her what guns she's getting. No, they just start handing her books saying, you're going to need these, and these.
Right. And then, of course, Madeline hands her an Agatha Christie. And she's like, Agatha Christie? Yeah, you know, for reading. Like the one book.
Like an actual book. One that's actually a book.
We do have actual books here. Not random books. Like, there's so much random shit just kind of laying around all over the place. Like, all sorts of books that are like, every other book is hollowed out and has something in it associated with the title on the spine. Everything from passports to cash to a gold bar, which you get to see her brain a guy with. All sorts of things. That comes much later on. So, with new weapons in hand, she goes off to basically retrieve the money from this guy. And she ends up shooting him in the stomach, which is beautiful. I think there's a whole thing before that, though, isn't there? Like, she's supposed to... Does she actually kill the guy first?
So, what happened is, in the original bit, before, obviously, the guy gives her the job...
Right.
She had already killed some guy, and it turns out that this guy was the son of a big gangster.
Right. Yes, I remember that part.
And the big gangster basically wants... And he doesn't realize it's a woman who's killed his son, so he's there like, I want the head of the man who did this. So then she's obviously on the run from this, and she has to deal with this as well.
That's right. So she does end up killing this... Well, not killing him initially, but she does end up shooting this guy to retrieve the briefcase full of money, at which time she realizes that she's basically sentenced this little girl to death because they're holding her ransom to be able to get this money. So this guy basically stole from the firm because, of course, you know... As most of these lovely movies go, there's some child involved that now needs to be rescued, and now the assassin has a moral dilemma and has to go and try to be the replacement daddy for the kid.
The replacement mommy.
Mommy daddy.
Because daddy dies.
Yes, daddy dies messily. Like, and really bad.
He says to Karen's character to basically look after his little girl.
Because
it's always the case. It's always that sentimental, look after my daughter.
So here's the thing that I have the problem with. The biggest problem that I have with this movie is that the men in this movie are oafish and stupid.
Yeah, they've made out men like we're fucking absolute buffoons. Now, here's my logic that I find a bit fucked up.
Okay.
I'm sorry, if I'm an assassin, yeah, I don't have a moral compass. If I'm an assassin, I won't have a moral compass. My job is to kill people and not feel remorse. So, if you're asking me to protect your daughter and you're dead, I'm sorry, no, there's one or two things happening. I'm leaving her on somebody's fucking doorstep or I'm putting her out of her fucking misery. That sounds very heartless and people are going to look at me and go, what? No, I'm sorry, if you're in the mindset of an assassin... You are not going to drag along something that's going to slow you down and make your job 10 times more difficult.
Well, she also had that little bit in her past, which is probably the only thing, that thing with her mother, is probably the only thing that even remotely gave her that little twinge of guilt for having killed this girl's father. And she was told blatantly, don't go save this girl, bring the money to us, the girl is collateral damage. But,
Even they knew...
The problem that I'm having is you got to assume these thugs that are supposed to go after her to retrieve the money from her because she's gone rogue are working for the same company. They're working for the firm. So they have to have been training these people approximately the same as they train their assassins. So they shouldn't be quite as easily killed.
Mm-hmm.
And tell me, first of all, the lead thug from the beginning of the movie doesn't look just a little bit like a young Ron Jeremy. So, you get these three buffoons that basically get the shit kicked out of them by Karen Gilliam wielding a metal panda backpack. How good do you feel about yourself if somebody just beat the shit out of you with luggage?
not only somebody, as bad as this is going to sound, so sexist, not only somebody, a woman beat the shit out of you with luggage. That is the most emasculating thing to ever happen.
To put this on a Star Trek, or Star Wars level, I should say, this is like the three lead star, like a stormtroopers getting the shit kicked out of them by Leia.
This is like Anakin Skywalker at his prime, like peak, I am the best of the best, getting the shit kicked out of him by someone like fucking C-3PO. Like C-3PO pimp slapping his ass and knocking him the fuck out. That's basically what this film represented of men.
Yeah. Yeah, well, because they thought they were good. They obviously thought they were good, but, you know, that's
like Anakin Skywalker did at the time. He thought he was the best of the best. So, and then what happened? Obi-Wan got the high ground. Sorry, I had to say it.
So she kicks the shit out of these three guys, and then we move on to the next scene where she goes to save the girl with the money. So you push the girl, you push the money to us, we push the girl to you. Basically, she's handing over money to four nondescript criminals, all dressed like the universal monsters. You had your Wolfman, you had your Dracula, you had your Frankenstein, and you had your creature from the Black Lagoon. Like,
Mom?
Mom?
Sorry.
No, I have no...
You said creature from the Black Lagoon, and that's mother? Sorry.
I have no response for that at all. Like, none. Anyway.
That's the point.
So they basically go through this. They go through this whole thing where she gives over the money to them, and she's like, "Okay, now you stay here. I've got to go get the money." And
so now that you're safe, little one, mommy's gonna go kill some motherfuckers.
Right, exactly. And so she goes off, and she goes and takes out all four of these guys in brilliant fashion, and realizes a little bit too late that she had. Basically, she was dealing with a bunch of idiots, one of which decided, hey, here, eat a grenade. Throws a grenade at the guy holding the fucking money. How brilliant was that?
Yep. Usually happens that way.
She was dealing with the ultimate in badass stupidity throughout the entire movie. Like, the women of this movie, I'm all for female empowerment films. But when you have female empowerment films, the guys that they're fighting against should seem as intimidating, or if not as cunning, as the women in the films. Otherwise, all you're doing is having a bunch of women beat up idiots.
Accurate. Sorry.
So I don't think that this movie came off as a female empowerment film. It felt like it was a handful of highly trained women beating the shit out of just a bunch of inept, sleazy guys.
See, this is why I say it was more of a feminist film instead of a women empowerment film, because a woman empowerment film, it would be fairly equal, and it would have been more good. For a feminist movie, it basically made women seem like they were the best things sliced bread.
Feminist film written by two guys, by the way. Right, so yeah. This film was written by two guys and directed by a man. So, I don't know where the feminist part came in or who they consulted to get their feminist ideals from, but kudos, bad job. Anyway.
basically, yeah.
Basically, it is just a shit show after that. She is on the run, the money is gone. She has to go and fend people off left and right, which comes up to part two, my favorite part of the movie. And this is the second fight scene with the Three Stooges, where she basically slaughters all three of them. Slaughters all three of them, minus the actual use for hands. Just a gun and a fucking scalpel taped to each of her hands.
See, I will give Karen Gilligan this, that she has gone to this extent of an actress where the only real thing we ever really saw her in, where she got her start, really, was Doctor Who.
Well, Doctor Who, she also was in both of the Jumanji remakes.
Yes, but she started in Doctor Who.
Right.
Then she went on to the Avengers.
Right.
And then she went on, well, she started off on the Guardians of the Galaxy. She basically got into the Marvel Universe. And the second she set foot in that Marvel Universe, the doors opened up for her.
Well, she's meant to be an action star. She's got that physique. She's got an action star's, a female action star's persona. I mean, that. I think that getting pigeonholed into a movie like this, as much as... I mean, I didn't hate Gunpowder Milkshake. I didn't hate the movie. But I didn't,
but you didn't
think,
like it either.
I didn't think it was a good showing of her acting abilities at all. I think that they watered down her character way too much. It could have been a much more fun film than it was. The dialogue just wasn't there.
In terms of rating this film, where would you give it?
And a rating one film?
One being god-awful, never again. 10 being... Alright, this shit was fire.
I'm going to have to give it a solid 6.5. It's not something I will...
You give it a better rating than I do.
It's not something I would never watch again, but it definitely is... Considering the star power that they had behind this movie, it is definitely something that they could have done better with.
So, I'd give it a 5 out of 10. Because it was good enough to watch the first time. Not something I would watch again of my own choice. If it was on, like somebody else had put it on, okay, I'll sit and watch it. You know, I'm not going to make them turn it off.
Sir, I have watched
it. But I'm not going to go out of my way to watch it again.
I have watched it once through of my own accord. I will not be watching it again.
Exactly, that's why I said it's a 5. Now, the problem I have with it is the fact that with the star power it had behind it, it should have done significantly better.
I would say that the entire movie for me was summed up in just the two fight scenes. The main fight scene that takes place with all the thugs in the actual library itself. And the fight scene between her and the three stooges in the middle of the doctor's office. Those were probably the best parts of the entire movie. Like, everything else for me felt like it needed to be fleshed out a little bit more, felt a little dry. You know, the conversations between her and her mother, like you were saying, I know what the accents of these two women are. You know, that is not their native tone, and there is no reason why at all they needed to make them American in this movie. None.
The thing is, as well, is it's one of these films where I feel like when they started production, things were on the right track, and then, like, somewhere, whether it was, like, near the beginning, they rushed it. They just rushed it.
Well, let's be honest, though, it's a Netflix movie. There are a lot of movies for Netflix that...
Netflix has been good with some of their original movies, though. You can't blame it on the Netflix.
Go through the entire catalog. Can you not at least admit that it is a solid 50-50? You got 50% decent shit and 50% stuff that just felt like it was thrown out there because
of
an algorithm.
I'd say 60-40.
Are we leaning towards good or bad?
Bad.
Bad? 60-40 on the bad side? Okay. So you liked far less than I did.
So. Yeah, but I still think they were... I'll give Netflix their dues, having a solid 40% of their movies that they make themselves be decent is more than most movie companies can say themselves. There's only one movie company that can literally say they're about 90-10 in favor of the good, and that's probably Warner Brothers.
Oh God, I would have said Disney's right up there.
Disney's more 80-20.
I want to say okay, I can't say before, I can't even say that.
Before Marvel was involved.
Oh God, like, yeah, they were struggling. Anything live action they were struggling with.
That's what I mean. Before Marvel was involved, Marvel's what shot them up.
Well, their acquisition of Marvel is what shot them up, because Marvel was not initially part of Disney.
No. No, before Marvel was even involved with Disney, Disney was like a solid 30-70 in terms of 70 being the bad films.
Right. Yeah, it was
the second they got Marvel involved and they started making Marvel production films, they shot up. And we're still only halfway through the phases that they fucking have planned.
And I am going to say, this is a very unpopular opinion, especially with a lot of people that I talk to about Disney movies. But I am going to say this, and this is just from my own perspective, that I think that a good 90% of the live-action Disney movies that they have done based off of their former animated movies have been absolute shit.
I will agree with you, part one.
I liked the Lion King movie.
I liked the Beauty and the Beast movie.
Okay. So you liked Beauty and the Beast, I liked Lion King.
Everything else, though, that they've done live action was trash. Like, the biggest one I think we can both agree on? Mulan.
Yeah, that wasn't
too bad. Do you know why that annoyed me the most?
Why?
Because Mushu wasn't in it. Mushu was the main part of Mulan!
I really did not like Aladdin at all.
Minus one person, it was a solid movie. My biggest issue, and it can't be helped, Will Smith, I love him as an actor, do not get, I fucking love him. The songs that they did were amazing. But there is only one true genie.
Right. It's the same reason why the second Aladdin animated movie did not work. Was because there was no Robin Williams.
Exactly. Wait,
was that the second or the third one?
I think it was the third.
No. I think it was the second one. I think the second one, they didn't have Robin Williams. They brought him back for the third one.
Either way, it was one of them ones like Robin Williams. Well, obviously, they couldn't help it because well before the time of filming that movie, he'd already passed. But, like, if they could have got him in, you know, if he was still alive and they could have got him in, that movie would have done so much better.
Right. So, just so I can help you get some sleep, Thomas, because I know it's very late for you over in the UK, I'm going to go ahead and just knock out the last bit of this movie. First of all, fight scene in the library, absolutely amazing. You know, it's the everybody comes together, the aunts, the mother, the daughter. They all come together to basically fight off this just massive amount of thugs that the firm is throwing at them. You have the fight scenes with Angela Bassett and the hammers. You got the minigun, you know, being wielded by Carla's character. And then, of course, Michelle Yeoh, who has this badass mastery of fucking chains. Right? Basically choking guys out and kicking the shit out of them.
For some reason, watching... What's her name again? Use the minigun.
Right.
My brain kind of gave me flashbacks to that one scene in Pirates of the Caribbean where the midget has the rocket launcher. I can't help it. That's all I could think in my head for some reason.
Well, because she was like the most, like, she was kind of like the sweetest one of the three.
She's the one who looked like she had no violent experience whatsoever.
She looked like if Annie Potts from Ghostbusters had decided to pick up one of the backpacks and go out, you know, the proton packs and go out and fight along with them.
She had no business doing it, but she did it anyway, sort of thing. That's what she looked like.
You know, and then she let her hair down. She's like, put on these headphones because it's going to get a little loud. And then it was fuck all and she was taking out people left and right.
It's like she had split personality disorder. Like, one, before she picked up the gun, she's sweet and innocent. The second she picks up the gun, fucking psycho murderer.
I'm a little sad that she is the only one that got killed. Of the group...
It happens.
Of the group...
Well, to make it even, somebody had to die. Otherwise, it would have seemed a little bit too perfect.
Of the group, if I had to pick somebody, if you had to pick somebody other than her to die, who would you have picked?
The mom.
The mom.
The mom.
Lena Headey.
Do you know why?
Yep.
Do you know why?
Why?
Because it would have made more of an emotional impact because of the whole, she's just been reunited with her mother. they'd just had this big battle together and then boom, the mother's dead. It would have made more of an impact.
I know that they wouldn't have picked her because she's the only one that has any real, like, true-to-life fighting skills in this movie. But I would have picked Michelle Yeoh. Because her character had, like, no personality at all. Like, there was barely any personality there.
I'll give you that.
Everybody else, they had sort of a fleshed-out character. They felt real. You know, Angela Bassett was kind of a badass. And you had...
Yeah.
You had Carla's character who was kind of coy, really unsuspecting. You didn't think she's going to be the one that's going to wield the minigun out of the top of the minivan. Outside of her fighting skills, which honestly, she was the only one that really had believable fighting skills the entire time.
You do realize Michelle Yeoh does have actual fighting skills though as well.
I'm aware of that. I've seen Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, and I know she's been trained in martial arts as well. She's not just a stage fighter. So
no, she can kick some ass. But did you know that Jet Li and Jackie Chan, both their fighting styles are based off the fact that they're circus performers.
Exactly. It's all stage performance. They know
it's how... It's all dancing for them, really.
But they are masters of the dance of stage fighting. And yeah. They're not martial artists. So, I mean, technically, Jackie Chan, he could open up his own martial arts dance academy. Basically.
No, to be fair, Jackie Chan and Jet Li, though, all these stage fightings that they can do, if they were to put it in actual practice and actually make physical contact with somebody, like, properly, they will actually do some damage. Like, it's not one of them things where it ain't gonna hurt. They can kick your ass and make it look good while they do it.
You know that 90% of his fighting, like, Jackie Chan does, like, all of his own stunts. Jet Li, not so much.
Oh, yeah, Jet Li used to, when he was younger, but as he got older, he stopped doing
his Jackie stunts. Chan to this day won't get involved in anything where he doesn't do most of his own stunts, like a good 90% of them.
Jackie Chan's the only one who he refuses to let anybody else do his stunts. Like Tom Cruise makes, he tried doing the whole I'm gonna do my own stunts thing in one of his movies, and he ended up breaking his ankle trying to leap a building.
Right. Oh, God, which movie was that, too? I remember...
It was a Mission Impossible, I think.
Wait, what?
It was either a Mission Impossible or Jack Reacher.
I think it might have been Mission Impossible. There's actually a lot of Jackie Chan's films, if you actually pick up the old DVDs that have all the special features. Jackie Chan used to put out a special feature on the disc that showed the exact point where he broke bones throughout the entire movie. Like, every major injury that he had in each movie was highlighted in his outtake reels. So he'd, like, point out fractured skull, broken rib, this, that, and the other thing, everywhere where he broke things.
Have you ever seen the compilations of him in his movies where he tries to eat gum?
No.
He doesn't eat gum like a normal person where he picks it up and puts it in his mouth. Every movie where he has gum, he'll have it in the palm of his hand and he'll slap his wrist and launch it up into his mouth. Every time. If you watch a film where he has gum, he never does this and just puts it in his mouth. He literally has it in the palm of his hand, slaps his arm, and launches it into his mouth.
I did not know that. Nope.
Same with his hats. He fucking puts them on, always, like, you know, the whole, like, grabs it one end and then flips it around his arm and then puts it on. He doesn't just put it on normally.
Well, he seems like a guy that likes to do things with a flourish anyway. Like, anything, yeah. Really. So to just kind of tie up the movie, the fight, after the fight's over and you know, Carla's character dies, they basically...
The movie becomes trash.
Sam offers to turn herself in to save Emily. Basically, turn herself into the firm and deal with the consequences of her actions. And in exchange, she's trying to barter for Emily's freedom. And, of course, you have the ending sequence of the movie where, you know, this place, which was actually the original separation of mother and daughter, is the final stand for mother and daughter against the patriarchy. And they take everybody the fuck out. So I like that even the main bad guy jumps out the window, only to be shot several times by Angela Bassett as he's going.
Yeah.
The part of the movie I did not like was the ending. I did not like the driving off into the sunset happily ending to this movie.
See, do you know what would have made that whole scene so much better?
What?
And would have set it up better for a sequel? Is that end bit as they're driving off, the van that they're in explodes. And then from the sequel, they carry on from the truck exploding, or the van exploding. Seeing who's still alive and who's died sort of thing. That would have been good.
Bear with me on this ending. I think what should have happened is I don't think there should have been even a driving off into the sunset scene. I think you can still have your sequel. I think the entire end credits should have been interspliced with the action from the fight in the diner. And you can have your driving off into the sunset thing, but have it post-credits. Instead of having it and then having the credits roll, which kind of felt anticlimactic, you know what I mean?
Do you know what would have been a good one? The little girl that she's been trying to save the entire time, as they're driving off, it goes into the car and you just see the little girl put a gun to the back of Karen Gilligan's head.
I don't forgive you.
That would have been good. That would have been perfect.
Something to that nature. Or the...
It gets rid of Karen Gilligan's character and sets the whole film up for a whole what the fuck just happened for the sequel.
Or even after all of that, the mother being a double agent and having been working for another group, and or she needed them to take out the firm.
Or is the real head of the firm.
Something
and she was just trying to take out certain underlings who thought they knew everything.
Or was looking to become the new head of the firm, basically take out the patriarchy and become the head where the patriarchy used to be.
Exactly, and being like, I can't have loose ends. Bang, 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 bang.
Bang, bang, bang.
Bang, bang.
All right, so that actually sums up the movie. I'm sticking with my 6.5. I didn't hate the movie, but honestly, I didn't love it. I've watched a lot of movies lately, and this is not up there in something that I will ever watch again.
My closing question for you.
Okay.
I'm not going to answer this because I don't really know, but I want your opinion on it. If you could recast this film, like anybody in the film you could recast, who would you recast? And why?
I would recast a few of the thugs. Maybe bring in some people that might have been a little bit more... I don't like the oafish thug thing. Like, I would have brought, like, Ray Park in. Ray Park has some serious fighting skills. He would have been a formidable foe for any one of them to have to go up against. You know, bring in somebody that would make the fighting a little bit more believable. Not so much, you know, fucking stormtroopers against the Force. Stormtroopers are continually missing, and the Force is knocking them down fucking left and right, you know.
Yeah.
This is exactly what I felt about that. So I would definitely recast with a couple of more well-known stars that actually had fighting skills. Like, you could even bring in... You know, because, I mean, you're going for a Russian theme. You could have even brought in Dolph Lundgren. You know? You're going for something Russian, you know, the Russian thugs from the firm, you know?
Yeah.
It's not that I don't like her. I wouldn't recast her, but I think that I would have fleshed out Michelle Yeoh's character a little better, given her a little bit more personality, so that I don't mind her sticking around at the end of the film. And I would have recast Paul Giamatti.
Thank you.
The problem that I had with it is that Paul Giamatti, when he plays fucking pissed off, he does a really good job. But he was so subdued in this movie that I don't mind recasting him at all. I would say I would have recast him with the likes of Mel Gibson. Mel Gibson would have done a fantastic job.
For a younger version, in terms of anger-wise, who I thought would have played a good role, would have been Charlie Hunnam, like a younger actor, though. Because he's got... Okay, from my experience of watching him in Sons of Anarchy, King Arthur, and another Prime exclusive film, actually, which I can't remember. His angriness, like his anger that he can portray as a character, he can go from angry to calm like that.
You inadvertently helped me change my mind right now.
Why?
To hell with Mel Gibson. Ron Perlman.
Yeah, I could see that too.
Because what we're looking for, because I don't think Charlie Hunter would have done a good job, only because you're...
Not Charlie Hunman.
Hunman, oh, sorry. My apologies.
Jax from Sons of Anarchy.
I know who you're talking about, too. I just misspoke.
I was going to say, he's British as well, so you calling him a hunter is offensive.
You want to have a guy... We're replacing Paul Giamatti. You're looking for an older man that would be the head of the patriarchy, basically. This guy...
But this is what I mean. You can make... Obviously, it's not like it's never been done before where they've made a young person look older.
Right.
And with his beard... With Charlie Hunman's beard and his hair, all they would have to do is put a few, like, white patches in and make him look slightly older, maybe add in a little bit of prosthetics with wrinkles. And he could pull off slightly, because it's only 15 years. Now, 15, no, I know you're about to say 15, but that's a long, nice time. No, but if you get him as he was, like, shave the beard, trim the hair back, make him look babyface, and then go 15 years from that... A little bit of grey in the beard, longer hair with a few little like white patches. He'd look the part of an older guy who's been around for 15 more years.
Two other wild card guys I've got that we could try to put. Oh God, what is his name? The guy that plays Negan.
Yes.
Is it Harry Morgan or something like that? Something to that nature?
I don't know his actual name, but I just know him as John Winchester.
Yeah, that guy. That guy there. If you want to go for somebody that could do subdued but then rage really well, you know, try him. Or
he can go psychotic. He can do the laughing.
Or somebody who hasn't had a lot of play lately but I think would do a very good job, Russell Crowe. If he could channel the same energy that he had in, Man with the Iron Fists. If he could channel that same energy.
One I'd like to see, and this is more just for a piss take version, mm-hmm. just because I think it would be funny to see them try and pull this off. Will Ferrell. The reason why, just to see him try and pull off a serious role,
I think that
as a bad guy.
He's played a bad guy once before, and like he did such a horrible job, huh?
In Zoolander,
yeah. Oh my God! But him trying to be serious.
He also played a henchman in Austin Powers.
No, Fez, that guy. Oh, both of my legs are broken. I will try to stand. Nope, they are both broken. Yes, they are.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I feel like if you gave him the chance, he could play a serious role if given the actual chance.
He has played a couple of serious roles. The problem with him playing a serious role is each time that I've seen him do it, he's played some kind of depressed, sad sack. He doesn't do angry serious very well.
No, I know a perfect actor, actually, who could replace the current actor. You better know him from Dumb and Dumber, not Jim Carrey.
Jeff Daniels, the other guy. Jeff Daniels might do a good job.
Do you know why I'm getting this? Have you seen Divergence?
Yes.
But the dog. Where he plays like the president of the people on the outside watching in on the city. From some aspects he's like this, you know, manipulative, like, oh, I'm on your side sort of person. But the second you're out of the way, fucking kill them all.
Okay.
Like he's very serious, stern. He can do that.
Before we tie this up, so I'm gonna throw my last wild card at you. And you just got to picture this because he's kind of a weird guy, kind of quirky, but he does angry and creepy really well. Steve Buscemi.
Who's that?
Steve Buscemi. He was a lead actor in Empire. He was in the movie Armageddon. He's done a lot of comedic performances. Look him up. You'll see what I mean. But he has done, like, stoic and creepy at the same time.
He's got that face, for me, it wouldn't do well. Because he looks more like the evil scientist or henchman, but he doesn't look like he'd be in charge.
Have you seen Reservoir Dogs?
No.
Reservoir Dogs, he played a certifiable fucking badass. Paranoid, but we're talking about...
Ooh! Bruce Willis.
We're talking about, remind yourself, we're talking about replacing him with Paul Giamatti's character. So we're looking for a guy that's sort of weaselly. He's willing to pull the strings, but he's not willing to be part of the fight.
Yeah, but this is the thing. If we change the dynamic of it with some of these characters, all they really need is the manipulative side. They don't have to get their hands dirty. They just need to manipulate the situation enough to get other people to do their dirty work for them. What I mean?
We want a certifiable badass. What about Ray Liotta? I mean, that guy right there. You got Rage, he does very well. Creepy, he does fucking well, and he exudes power just by fucking looking at him.
I'll give you that. Do you know who would have been a funny one to put on there? The guy who plays Ross in Friends.
David Schwimmer?
Shits in gigs.
I don't think I've ever seen him play a bad guy in anything. Like,
exactly. That's why I feel like it'd be good.
I mean, unless you count Friends, because he was sort of a bad guy in that.
Hey! They were on a break!
Exactly. With that, I'm going to let you get some sleep, sir. Thank you for joining me for Gunpowder Milkshake today. And yes, we are going to go ahead and start a Patreon. We're going to have that up on our page on Facebook. We are pre-recording this, so it should be up by the time this comes out. And
the question is, if you guys really want to keep hearing me on the podcasts, subscribe to the Patreon.
Subscribe to the Patreon. Because you know what? I don't need it myself. But these lovely people that work with me, they need to get paid for this. They need to know that their time is... You guys are fucking money grubbing hoes. What the hell's wrong with you?
Hey! Hey! Do you want to know why I'm losing weight so fast?
You don't have enough to eat?
Pretty much! So yeah, Daddy needs some money.
Thank you for reminding me. Next time I have you on the podcast, I'm eating a cheeseburger in front of you.
I will steal an airplane and throat punch you. Don't test me, Chris.
Like, with your hand or with the actual plane itself? Because there's a border between actual violence and terrorism. If you crash a plane into my house to throat punch me, that's kind of terrorism. I mean...
Yeah, true, but at the same time, I'd be dead too. Whereas if I throat punch you with my fist, the likeliness of me dying in that situation is slim to none.
You gotta get me close first, so you gotta be nice enough for me to get just close enough for you to...
Yeah. Who's faster? You or me?
Yeah, I think you underestimate my flight instincts.
And how... Motherfucker, I play rugby. Okay, the equivalent of your American football, but a little bit more violent.
Again, you underestimate my flight instinct.
And you underestimate my strength. Trust me, before I appear at your house, your tires would have been slashed, so there is no getting away. Every other door except for your front door would have been locked, and I would have welded bars to your windows just to make sure that the only way you're getting out is through me.
I'm going to leave you with this idea. Before I became the man that you see before me right now, I was a 155-pound weakling with a wise-ass mouth that got his ass handed to him on a continual basis. If there is one thing that I have learned throughout my entire life, it is to run fast, to escape, and know how to be away from the thing that's going to hit me.
Here's the thing, like I said, I'm not going to let you know.
I am confident in my ability to recognize the threat as it comes at me.
The thing is you won't know when I'm coming at you. I'm not going to let you know when I'm there. I could sneak into your house and wait for you to be asleep. Or I could sneak into your work and wait for you to get there. There are a multitude of things I can do where you are not going to see me coming until I'm face to face with you.
If I go missing, you guys heard this. It's his confessional. Anyway.
my name is Miss B.
Miss B. Oh, you're going to blame her now. Oh, that's nice. Yeah.
She's going to listen to this and text me like, you motherfucker.
Thank you for listening to us. Catch us on Facebook, Twitter, Patreon. Please catch us on basically anywhere that podcasts are available. We are all over the fucking place. And, you know, fucking stay hydrated.
Yes!
Stay hydrated.
Yes, stay hydrated.